Hey everyone, thanks for listening in. We are talking 2026 World Cup coming to the United States and Canada and Mexico, but mainly to the United States. That is where the World Cup
well
is
read,
coming.
Well read. I like it.
Canada and Mexico are getting some games, but really the knockout rounds for the most part are in the U.S., and most of the matches are going to be here anyway. So it is really the 2026 United, Memphis on United. World Cup, I guess they're calling it. So I'm here with Joey Gallino and Alex Baker, per usual, the FC Yahoo folks. If you don't know, Joey Gallino is the managing editor for soccer, everything soccer related at Yahoo Sports.
Man, did they mess up when they made that hire?
And he has not really slept, so we're taking advantage of him being a little delirious, as you would imagine in these early days of the World Cup. But we are talking about 8 years from now. So let's really get into it and kind of peel back what it means for the United States in particular to get this World Cup. Obviously an automatic bid, so we're not missing out on the World Cup to start with. Probably going to be an expanded field, so that wasn't really an issue.
Yeah, you joke, but after this past year in Trinidad, I'm a little cautious. So.
Oh, I joke a lot at your expense usually. But one of the reasons that you know, people were really upset about the U.S. not making it this time around, was Christian Pulisic not getting the World Cup experience that everybody wants him to get. 19-year-old Christian Pulisic, which means, ding, 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 27, in the prime of his career, hoping for no injuries, obviously, when the World Cup is at home. So you have potentially the perfect storm of a player that United States has developed so far as the greatest player in the history of their program by far. It's been basically said by the greatest players in the program thus far have said that this guy is way better than anyone else has ever been for this team. In the prime of his career, playing in the biggest tournament at home, we are about to develop a legitimate sports superstar, not soccer superstar, because he already is a soccer superstar in this country, a sports superstar that's going to go above and beyond. Joey, the 2026 World Cup, what are you thinking? What are you expecting? What do you think it means?
I think this is big because for like a number of different reasons, and I think one you touched on is really key. Pulisic is obviously amazing. You know, we know his potential. We figure, like you said, God willing, injury-wise, development-wise, you know, he's still going to be really, really good at the very worst 8 years from now. I also think that we have – it's not that it's any one of these players that I'm going to mention, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Josh Sargent. You know, there's just so many players who have the potential to be great that are in the class right now of that Pulisic kind of age group that you have to figure at the – even a rational reading of the situation would say at the very worst that two or three of them are going to be world class. And when you say world class, I'm not talking about necessarily like Ronaldo or Messi or like that. But the fact is, Pulisic is a Borussia Dortmund regular at 19. That's not something to shake a stick at. That's really good. And Weston McKennie is the central midfield force on the second place team in the Bundesliga this year. Now, if you want to make jokes about how, oh, everyone's second place behind Bayern, I get that. But, you know, there's still like a lot of talent in this crew. And so, you know, to what you alluded to, Shahan, like when this World Cup comes around in 8 years, a lot of these guys are going to be either in their prime or entering their prime. And as long as the 2022 World Cup qualifying cycle is not a complete failure, and these guys kind of get that experience of playing at this tournament, man, qualifying automatically for the World Cup in 2026 and having that stage and not having the pressure of, you know, having to fly to another country or whatever. We've seen the home, you know, the home soil boost. USA 94, big thing for U.S. soccer. France, only World Cup they've ever won was on French soil. South Korea, the only time a non-European or South American team ever made the semis was in 2002 when they co-hosted with Japan. Like, there's a tangible impact
England.
There. Yeah, England. Well, that's going back to 66. I mean, that's a while ago. No offense, England fans, but
Russia beat Saudi Arabia 5-0.
Beat Saudi Arabia 5-0.
A team we did not think Russia could beat anyone 5-0.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, long story short, yeah, like I think there's a tangible impact there. And when you combine that support with the fact that this might be the best generation of players we've ever developed, I think it's encouraging. I think it's good that we landed the bid, to be honest.
Also, I think we should also include 7-1 Brazil. No, oh, wait, that God. Doesn't work the narrative at all.
Man.
Alex, before I...
I'm still ashamed of that for Brazil on there.
Before I go on another tangent, so has Dante. He's so much so that I had to get rid of him. Alex, 2026, what do you think it'll mean for just domestic U.S. soccer? And not just the players, but the culture of soccer in this country and how it's perceived. And really, I mean, even the World Cup going on right now. How do you think the coverage is now as opposed to it'll be in 8 years from now?
Well, I think it could not have come at a better time for U.S. soccer because we are missing out on the current World Cup. And the other day, I was just listening to like MSNBC's desktop app all day, and it was just all
news.
Why
would you do that? Sorry, yeah, go on.
Did you just out your political leanings? Is that something that happened? Intended
in that. Maybe he hate listens to it.
But the I listened for a few hours, and then there was one anchor who was signing off, and she just sort of mentioned, by the way, the World Cup kicks off today, and the USA just won the 2026 World Cup bid. In most other countries, that would be... I mean, I realize there's a lot going on here right now, but still, that would have been like a lead story or a ticker tape thing or something. It was just as an afterthought. And I think that maybe we're in this thing where not making the World Cup this year, it's sort of a growing pain. Like, not every country makes the World Cup every year. We've had a pretty good run of making
statistically, it. Statistically, yeah, we have.
Right. Italy didn't make it this year.
Look at Peru, 36 years.
Right, and that's a soccer nation. That's a soccer country.
Yeah, it's not a given that you make the World Cup. We've been spoiled in the United States that this country has made it for so many consecutive years.
I think,
what, going back to 88, where?
86.
86, I mean, sorry.
86 was the last time the U.S. missed out.
So
there was no World Cup in 88. It'd be tough to make
it.
Tough to make it in a year.
Couldn't make the Euros. I don't know what was going on.
Why can't we make the Euros? You're not in Europe. Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry,
That's a convincing argument, yes.
But some of these sort of foibles that we've had, not making the World Cup, the whole thing with the Columbus Crew wanting to relocate to Austin, these are growing pains. This kind of shows you that soccer is maturing as a sport in this country. It's the fact that it even seems to matter that we didn't make the World Cup.
I think that's a good point.
Anyway, 2026, this is a long answer for that question, but
that's okay.
It just kind of puts... It gives us a marker to work towards.
I think this is the second. I'll jump in here. I think this is the second.
Save me.
Kind of save you from what? You were right. I agree.
Okay, while you're jumping in, can I just jump in and say part of the growing pains, they're pro versus anti relegation.
No, don't start.
Are we going to have a pro rel debate? Let's do it. Let's do it.
What's your side on the issue, man? Huh? Which side are you on?
All right.
Sorry, Joey.
No, it's okay. I think. Okay, honestly, like I said this in one of our mixers recently, like our FC Yahoo mixer posts. Not that me, Alex, and Jahan don't get together and get blind drunk, but I just want to throw that out there.
Would you you guys get drunk for those?
What?
No. Makes sense. explains a lot of your mixer
totally
takes.
Your takes now.
Yeah, yes. I never quite understood.
Don't they make more sense though? Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus.
No, but when I threw this out there, I think this is true. Like, I think that the USA 94 was so vital and so critical in getting soccer off the ground in this country, and there was a tangible impact. You have MLS that kind of steeped out of that. The Women's World Cup, and even the women will tell you, like the who played for that team, like that was a big thing in this country in terms of just establishing soccer as a sport. And the quote I used in the mixer post that I was going to mention was Wright Thompson, the great sports writer we all respect, I assume, said, if you ever want to know what is hot in the stock market or what's a growth market, in general, go to the Kentucky Derby, because the people who own those horses, and not I'm not talking about stabling them, I'm not talking about training them, the people that own those horses are investing in things that are, the hot commodities and on the come up, if you will. And a bunch of them told him off record that soccer is something that's like about to pop. Like it's fizzling right now. It's about to pop. And if we, since we got the 2026 World Cup, not only are you going to see like, it's not going to only have like a tangible impact on MLS and things like that. It's going to go from a point to where, why don't we have our own, pro league is what people are asking. Why aren't we better at this? to the point where it's the question becomes, why aren't we competing every single time out for the title? And that little boost right there from, you know, just an attention mindset and just from like an infrastructure mindset, I think is going to be valuable. And I think it's hard to see that happening just now when it's intangible. But I think that that's going to be a big thing that's going to come around in 2026. And again, it kind of relies on the development of the program and rebounding from the World Cup qualifying failure. And maybe we win the Gold Cup and qualify for the Confed Cup in a couple of years. But, you know, that kind of impact, I think, can happen. And I think that that's ultimately going to be the story of the U.S. winning the bid, I should say, for the World Cup in 2026.
Do we even want to mention the impact it has potentially on Mexico or China to be involved in it? Or is that just kind of...
That's an interesting topic, though. I think it is. Like,
because I believe the number is 60 of the 80 matches will be in the United States.
Yeah.
So it is mainly a United States victory, even though Canada and Mexico...
We'll be part of it.
Yeah, they'll be part of it, although I'm curious to see what type of tariffs we put on them for every match. or whether or not they have to, like, how we get...
Oh, man.
Do we fly over the wall? Is it tall enough that... Can we fly over the wall?
We could record in, like, a two-hour separate podcast.
I was talking about the Canadian wall, by the way.
You guys criticized me for MSNBC. Wow.
No, I'm being serious. No, this is 8 years. There's a lot of time to build those walls.
That's something. I think that there's, like, a longer...
What I mean is, like, it is at this point, beyond the sports side of it, there are some tensions between all three of these countries. To have them all kind of share in an event that they're all hosting together, it's kind of an interesting, you know, interesting thought in terms of where there will be. Will it be like a shared experience, or is this just kind of be like Mexico has their handful of matches, Canada has their handful of matches? It's really a U.S. bid. U.S. is owning this entire process. Or is it like genuinely, is this like a partnership thing? Because initially, it seemed like it was presented that way, even though the U.S. was doing the heavy lifting on this bid, clearly, when we saw the details of what was in there and what was actually awarded. It seems like it's a U.S.-heavy build, but is this like, does this actually mean anything for Canada and Mexico is kind of what I'm getting to.
I mean, I think it does. I think, you know, Mexico... I mean, we're looking at this to be transformative in the USA. That's what we're talking about. It's not really going to be transformative in Mexico. Mexico's had two World Cups. Soccer's already their national pastime. It's just going to reaffirm that, and they're going to celebrate that, and that's great. For Canada, it's a chance to participate in an opportunity that they don't really get because they don't qualify. So that's exciting. So that could have a sort of bump there. But I just don't think that... you know, Canada, their sport is hockey. And while they do like their soccer, and there's some big MLS clubs up north of the border that do well and, you know, draw great crowds, I don't know. I guess I'm just not that familiar with the Canadian soccer landscape to tell you whether this
is they're pretty awful whenever I watch them. Yeah. When I watch them, like,
the team is bad.
They have 8 years to just not
end up. But they do have the best MLS team.
They have 8 years to not look like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, basically. They got to find a few more Dwayne De Rosarios out there.
I think the time scales here are the interesting point to make because, you know, it's easy to say, like, it's easy for people to comprehend that, okay, a certain country or a joint bid like this one won the right to host the World Cup. And that, you know, it sort of belies the point that this only comes around once every 4 years. So obviously it's big for the United States. I think that, you know, like we've discussed, they're going to take advantage of it. To the max effect, or at least try to. Mexico doesn't need the help. Obviously, their program is the best in CONCACAF, and they're probably going to continue to be that for a while. And they will become, I think, the first country to host the World Cup 3 times, if I'm not mistaken, even though this obviously is a joint bid again. Canada, obviously, like you mentioned, Alex, is happy to just have... I think they've qualified for, what, 1 World Cup ever? So, like, the fact that they're going to get there automatically and see what they can do is a good thing.
Which, by the way, is not guaranteed as of right now, but it's expected because CONCACAF will have, we believe, 7 spots, and it'd be really weird to not give Canada one of those spots. Like, you can host games, but you can't be in them.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Can you guys get rushed to play at the opening ceremony, though?
Yeah.
Can we get Bieber?
Yeah. Oh, you know that's going to happen. I mean, you joke.
How old will he be by then?
I actually know 40. Exactly how old he'll be, and I don't want to admit it on this podcast.
Oh, man. I know how old I'll be. I actually did that math, and it's not pretty. Yeah.
I don't like that math.
Anyways, anything else you guys want to add before we wrap this on up? Joey?
Well, I think it'll be the first, 48-team tournament that they're going to do, so that'll be interesting.
That's all? Only 48?
I think... by then, who knows?
Many teams are not in the World Cup at this point.
You know, I think it's you know, the infrastructure of the U.S. and, you know, to give credit, like Mexico and Canada have their fair share of like big stadiums that are ready to go. So, you know, I think it makes sense that this was the bid that won over Morocco ultimately. But I'm excited. I think it's going to be great for soccer in this country. I think it's going to be great for, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Canada and Mexico's programs. And, you know, it's like Alex said, it's sort of like a silver lining, you know, a ray of sunshine in the clouds that have surrounded the U.S. program in the recent years. So,
Alex?
Yeah, I just want to, I think you can see that there's an appetite for this. And you can, it's evidenced by these MLS expansion teams who've come in, like Atlanta, like LAFC, who've got new stadiums and they're filling them. Right away, they're filling them. They're selling. They can't even sell enough tickets. So I think the demand is there, and the narrative that you know, something that Doug said actually in one of your roundtable discussions. You know, if the USA hadn't made the World Cup, say 2002. That would have been a disaster. We might not be sitting here. We would definitely not be sitting here doing this podcast right now because. As Doug, I'm quoting Doug McIntyre here. MLS would have folded on the spot. The whole future of the USA program would have
not only been a question, but
it just would have said, what's the point? So we're at a good place. We're strong, and there is a demand, and there's a growth of the sport that's continuing.
And real quick, that's what I was mentioning earlier. Like, you know, this next World Cup will kind of take it to that next level, that USA 94 kind of put us in that spot, like you were saying. Not that you're wrong about the 2002 edition, but yeah, like, this is the growth that is tangible of soccer in this country, and this bid, I think, is going to only help that.
My takeaway from this whole thing is, imagine if the U.S. had made the World Cup and Bruce Arena was in charge, and it was that team that we saw that, let's say they'd gotten a draw against Trinidad and Tobago, and then they go to the World Cup and just fall flat in their faces. I mean, are those better headlines than USA gets the World Cup to host in 2026? I actually think that in the long run, this might have helped out the U.S. Domestically as a program and in terms of visuals and what we expect going forward. Because, sure, it would have been great for Christian Pulisic to get on that stage and players like him and young guys. But really, we would have not really figured out that the U.S. program was incomplete.
Who the other 10 guys who go out there with him would be.
No, well, I just mean like the program would have been in just such shambles without it having that statement that, hey, everything needs to get overhauled. Sunil Gulati would probably still be in charge. Mm-hmm. Bruce Arena would be leading the team into the World Cup. There would be a lot of things that would be pushed off until they had the expected disaster, or let's say they somehow shockingly made it around to 16 and then fell out. They weren't going to win the tournament or be close to it. And then instead, you know, you kind of look at the other side of what ended up happening, which is there's no headlines about the U.S. making the World Cup as the World Cup is starting right now. You're not getting those push alerts. What's the push alert you're getting? The U.S. is hosting the World Cup in 8 years. As a U.S. fan, that should get you excited. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the U.S. draw 0-0 or lose 2-0 to some team in Russia, which is what more than likely would have happened had they made it through, because they weren't good enough. They didn't deserve to go to the World Cup from what we saw. I mean, Costa Rica smashed them 6-0 over two legs, essentially. So if that's what you're dealing with, and Costa Rica is a good team and all, but we're not expecting them to do anything in this World Cup. If the U.S. was that far behind on the pitch, I think when you really look at it in terms of mentally the impact of these headlines coming now and not having the headlines of the U.S. just faltering and stumbling in Russia, I think as a net, it's a net positive on how the program looks externally from the casual fans, as well as in terms of how to restructure the team itself going forward for a long-term fix. Because the goal isn't necessarily to win in 2022. It's to win in 2026 when you legitimately have a, you have enough time to get that team set up, get them some experience in 2022, rebuild everything, have them playing the right way, and then throw that home field advantage behind them and see really what they can do.
Yeah, and again, like just real quick, just to wrap up, like the expectation scales here I think are critical to consider. Again, this tournament's been going on for almost 100 years now. Eight countries have won it. When Jürgen Klinsmann made the proclamation that the U.S. would be a semifinal squad in 2018 this summer, obviously that didn't, you know, come true for reasons we've detailed both today and in the past. But
almost, though. They were close.
How close were they? But, like, yeah, like, I think that, you know, it's not even that you have to set the expectation as to win the 2026 edition. You have to make history. Again, only South Korea has dented the European South American semifinalist, you know, rap sheet, if you will. And that's obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in this World Cup, but that would be a big achievement if the U.S. could move that far, maybe get to the final. And again, winning the World Cup would be the ultimate glory. So, you know, and that's only, what, two cycles from now. So I think that, yeah, this is important for a lot of different reasons.
That's I just want to make it clear. I do not think the U.S. will win the World Cup in 2026. I just think that it's one of those things where you should see them take tangible steps to getting to where they're competing at that level between now and then. And if they don't, I think you really need to look in the mirror and really fix everything, because this is an incredible opportunity.
That would almost be more painful than missing.
Well, okay, let's not go down that rabbit hole. I think we're all very positive on 2026 as a whole. So I think we're going to wrap up now. So for Joey Gallino, for Alex Baker, this is Misha Hanamed. Thank you for listening.